I don't know how to what you're supposed to say today, but something like Happy Freedom Day. And I take it as a very good sign that the Iowa caucuses happened on Martin Luther King Day. So may it be a good sign for things to come. And so I would like to do something a little bit different this evening. And I'd like to just tell you a story. And it's a Zen story. And I'd like you to listen to the story carefully. I'm sure you are going to listen carefully. But in the way that, imagine that you're the character in the story. Or somehow try to kind of become the story or listen very carefully. Kind of imagine like you're role-playing or something. Kind of listen and see what it would be like if this was you, what it would be like to go through these events that I'll describe. So the Zen monk, his name is Mushin, and lived for many, many years in a Zen monastery in Japan. And he was recognized, or often recognized, as the most radiant, happy, joyful monk in the monastery. People who met him often were set at peace and felt quite joyful and contented to have met him, inspired. And it was a remark that he never seemed to want anything at all. However, he had this knack that he always seemed to be in the right place at the right time to offer people help if anybody needed anything. He also didn't seem to be bothered by anything at all. And however, his monastic job was to be the cook. And his job was to put out, he was the head cook, to put out the food. And if the cooking went well, if it didn't go well, he did his job very well and very thoroughly, but never seemed to be bothered by how it was going or whether people liked his food or not. And he just was always radiant and at peace. Remarkable person. So that's you. And so in this story there's a description of him like this, and then there's a person who's narrating says that because he always seemed to be at ease, we asked him if this was always been the case for him, if he'd always found monastic life such a easy thing to do, such a wonderful thing to do, and they take to it naturally. And this is what he said. He said, "Oh no. Monastic life was very hard for me when I first came to the monastery. And in fact, I came to the monastery because I was a young man and I'd reached a point of great despair. I had encountered a lot of suffering in my life. I didn't feel like I could handle the suffering anymore. And I considered very seriously taking my own life. But I came to the monastery instead. And the monastery was the end of the line for me, last chance for me. And I came to the monastery and I had an entrance interview with the abbot. And the abbot asked me many questions. And I told him things that I never told anybody before. And he asked me more questions, and I told him about myself and what I wanted to do and my despair. And then the abbot said, after listening for a long time, he said, "Welcome to the monastery. You can stay here and we'll see how it goes." And then as I was leaving, I said, "Well, now that I'm going to be living here in the monastery, I suppose as a novice monk at first, do you have any instructions for me of how I should practice?" And the abbot looked at me. The story is written in first person at this point. So he looked at me with great compassion and great confidence. And I was sure that he was going to give me some very personal, pertinent, or powerful advice. And the abbot said to me, he said, "Always go through the doors completely. always go completely through the doors. Well, I didn't know what to make of that, so I thought it was kind of strange. So I went, I was happy to be in the monastery, and so the next day I thought about this little advice that he'd given me, and he was an old abbot, I thought maybe he was senile or something, or maybe I'd misheard him or something, but to go completely through the doors. And so the next day I woke up, and there was a strange thing happened, that every time I walked through a door in the monastery, I heard a little whisper. And at first I couldn't make it out. But I listened all day very carefully. And finally I could tell that every door said the same thing. And then finally I could hear the whisper a little bit faintly what it said. And as I went through each door said, "It is all empty." So then I went to the other monks and said, "Do you hear those doors? They speak." And they said, "No." And I explained to them that they keep saying it's all empty. What does that mean? And they just shrugged, and as if they didn't have a clue, and just walked away. So I had to listen to this. Every time I went through a door, there's a lot of doors in the monastery. It's all empty. And after a while, I thought, oh yeah, this is referring to the life that I left behind before I came to the monastery. This life of that of trouble, of difficulty, of ambition and pursuit and womanizing and possessions and status and fame that I was all seeking and, you know, all these different things. All that is empty. And it's great. I felt so happy to be at the monastery. I'd be able to leave all that behind. And I was being reminded of what I was being left behind. I felt so happy. It was so good to be reminded of what I had been left behind. It was all empty. But the voices persisted. It is all empty. So I didn't know quite what to do, but I threw myself into monastic life because that was the contrast to the life I left behind, and I was so happy to be there. And I engaged wholeheartedly in the monastic life and for years tried to go through the ranks and kind of saw myself becoming a better monk. And was very ambitious about kind of moving up through the ranks of different positions in the monastery. But these voices were always kind of nagging me every time I walked through a door. And the voice said, "It is all empty." And after a while, I began to think, well, maybe this, all these positions and work that I do in the monastery, all the status I'm acquiring as a good monk, maybe it's all empty. Maybe there's no purpose to it. And I started feeling a lot of despair. If life outside the monastery had no purpose, it was empty the way I knew it, and now the life within the monastery is empty, what's left? And my old despair started to come back. And I thought, oh, well, it's monastic positions, it's trying to get a position in the monastery and status, that's all empty. It's kind of vain. I've kind of taken the wrong turn. I'm here for spiritual enlightenment. I should pursue the inner life. So I threw myself into meditation practice. I would go sit in the Zendo more than any other monks. I would go deeply into my meditation practice. And I started feeling, you know, really holy. Really, like, really special. And, you know, and like I was probably the holiest person in the monastery because everyone else wasn't meditating as much as me. And I felt quite good about myself. It was really great, you know. I had some good success in my meditation. It just kind of added to my sense of confidence that, yeah, I was becoming a spiritual person. This is really great. But those voices kept following me. Every time I went through a door in the monastery, it's all empty. It's all empty. And after a while, I realized, once again, I've been caught by vanity and by self-identity and pride, conceit. And all that is empty. So I let it go. But my meditations were still very good. So I kept meditating a lot. And it was really great. I had great spiritual experiences. But every time I left the meditation hall door would say, "It is all empty." And it kept saying that. It's all empty. And I started thinking, what about these meditation experiences I'm having? Are they empty? What does it mean that they're empty? And maybe this is the wrong way to go. So then I heard that in Zen Buddhism, one of the great teachings is the teachings of emptiness. So I decided to go to the library. And I read and read the great books about the philosophy of emptiness, about how everything in its essence has no essential intrinsic nature. How everything, because it's empty, everything arises in dependence on other things. Nothing is self-existing. And I studied and studied, and I was amazed how much you could learn about this wonderful philosophy of emptiness. And I spent a long time in the library. But the library doors and all the doors in the monastery kept saying, it is all empty. And after a while, I felt this emptiness philosophy was not helping me. It was doing nothing. It was all empty. So then I started feeling a lot of despair. I didn't know where to go anymore. I didn't know what to do. And I started to hide in my room a lot because then I wouldn't have to go through any doors. And so I even took to climbing out windows to avoid the doors. And then, or I tried to run through the doors, thinking if I ran through the doors. But as time went on, this thing that happened was the voices got louder and louder. It is all empty. It is all empty. Louder and louder. And I'd run through the doors and it started echoing through the hallways after me. And it wasn't, you know, I just, you know, and echoing in my head, it's all empty, it's all empty. And I would have, any thought I would have would be followed by this echo, it's empty. Or any feeling I'd have. Or any perception I had. Oh, it's all empty. It's all empty. What does this mean, it's all empty? What does it mean? It's all empty. And I was just miserable. I had nowhere to go anymore. I had nothing to do. I had nothing. Nothing seemed to offer me any hope anymore. I'd come to the monastery because I'd lost all hope. And the monastery was really the last chance for me. And I'd given my best, and it's all empty. Had I been deceived by the monastery, by Buddhism, by the monastic life, by the abbot? Where could I go? So I finally decided, this is it. I can't take it anymore. These voices echoing over and over again. It's empty, it's empty, it's empty, it's empty. Just, it was too much. So I went running out of the monastery. I was going to go up into the mountains and jump off a cliff. I was going to really do it now. But then I came to the great big gates, entrance gates, exit gates, gates to the monastery. The one last door to walk through, and I froze just before going through it. I couldn't get myself to go through it. I stood there frozen, and I kept hearing in my head, it's empty, it's empty, it's empty. Everything that came up in my mind. And then I remembered the instructions of the abbot the first day. Always go completely through the doors. And that when I heard those teachings, they seemed so empty themselves, so meaningless, pointless, that little teaching. But now that instruction seems monumental, huge, and impossible to fulfill. I just couldn't get myself to go through those big entrance gates, those gates of the monastery, to leave. I was so frightened by what those voices that would echo again as I went through that gate. And my mind became quite frightened. Frightened of anything you could think or see or touch or feel. It was all empty, all empty. And so my frightened mind contracted on itself, away from everything, pulling away from everything. But the abbot had said, always walk completely through the doors. And there was just one more door to walk through. So I don't know what took over, but something propelled me finally to step through the gate out to the monastery. And as I did that, there was this huge booming voice that went, it's all empty. And with that, my poor frightened mind let go of itself. And I turned around, went back into the monastery, and now hope and despair are irrelevant for me. And now I've been happy in this life ever since. So that's the story. What do you make of that? What is it? What's the teaching of it's all empty? There was no explanation of what this statement is supposed to mean. It's all empty. It's all something the monk took on himself as he went through it. His own interpretations, his own way of seeing different things. Sometimes he saw it as a teaching of vanity, pointlessness. Sometimes he saw it as the great philosophical teaching of Buddhism. Something happened there for that monk. At the end of the story, he was transformed and became that radiant, happy monk that everyone was inspired by, who seemed to have no wishes and was not bothered by anything. So did you listen carefully? So now I'd like to ask you to gather together with three other people, so little groups of four. And if you don't want to do this, if you don't want to talk to anyone, then you can sit quietly and meditate for a few minutes while they talk, and then we'll regroup. But form little groups of four, and then in your little groups of four, discuss this story amongst yourself. Remember, you were the character. So what was it like for you to hear this story, and how do you understand it for yourself? Not just in the abstract, but, you know, and how was it the monk could be so thoroughly transformed by the voices in the doors? So we'll do that for a few minutes, have a little discussion, and then I'll ring a bell and we'll come back into a big gathering.